Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
And welcome back to another edition of Leaving Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. It's been an ugly week here in Northern California. Been raining a lot. It's been pouring cats and dogs out here. I think it's what? Each day has been like an inch of water or something like that. I'm beat. I'm tired. This gloomy look outside, man, gets you into that I want to go to sleep mode. But we got a lot of stuff here on Leaving the Ring to talk about. Past fights that happened this past weekend. Terrence Crawford versus Raymond Beltran. They finally went at it. One of the fights that most folks were looking forward to. I didn't really live up to the hype. Crawford did it, you know, he did his job. He did exactly what he's supposed to do in terms of looking at as the best lightweight out there in the division. He was able to keep him outside of his punches. He was able to move. He was basically able to do anything that he wanted to do. Beltran couldn't seem to catch the rhythm. I think I got Gabriel on the line right now because I can hear him breathing like a bull.
like Peter Quillen preparing to go on stage. I'm just here breathing.
No.
Have you seen that video? We'll get to Peter Quillen's acting career later, but yeah.
I seen when he was doing
Scarface monologue. I mean, I know Cholo. I could throw a rock and like Stockton or like Oxnard to hit a Cholo. They could do that monologue better. But I digress. I'm sorry. Go back to talk to the fights.
You know, Ray Beltran couldn't catch his rhythm. And it wasn't really because it was an off night for him. We've seen him let his hands go. We've seen him always – he's always been that guy to go for it, you know. But I've always said in the past that sometimes because of being a sparring partner, he's kind of got stuck in that mode. I'm not sure if he was really stuck in that mode. To me, he had the face of confusion. You know, he really didn't know how to cut the ring off. He didn't know how to set him up and get that overhand right in there. And you know what's funny is that when he got into that pocket, he kind of froze. You know, he just didn't know if he should throw the body, if he should throw back to the head. And it was a little bit of what Crawford was doing. But at the same time, I really enjoyed what Crawford did in the ring. I think he's an excellent, excellent, excellent boxer. But I may be one of the only guys out there that are thinking, I think we're giving him a little bit too much credit right now. Just because of the fact that, okay, not going to take it away. Beltran was the number one guy for him to face. But at the same time, it was so easy, Gabriel, that it just makes you wonder how good is Crawford? Because when you got a guy like Beltran that was gun-shy and wasn't really willing to let any shotgun bullets loose, anybody could have really gotten away with the way Beltran was fighting. Now, whether it was really Crawford's style that was confusing him, or was it really Beltran kind of falling back into that shell shock mode of being a sparring partner, getting confused a bit with the southpaw stance? Did it make him start reminiscing of who he once was, which was the sparring partner of Manny Pacquiao? I don't know. There's a lot of questions there. I think there's a lot of room to criticize whether or not Crawford is the real deal. I know the fight of the year is something that everybody's going to start talking about and it's getting thrown out there. I just think it's so shallow for the fight of the year pick that I think if we had another 2 months at it, I think we'd probably get a little closer to picking somebody, but we don't. We only have 27 days left here on the calendar. But I don't know. What's your thoughts about it?
I thought it was a good fight. I don't know if he's fighter of the year. It just doesn't seem like he's, I mean, Sergey Kovalev might be that guy, a guy that, you know, really at the beginning of the year he was looking at, like, you know, this might be a lost year for Sergey, that he might be that odd man out, just kind of waiting for something to drop in his lap, just like one good fight, something. And then he has the year that he has and really turns things around and shuts out Bernard Hopkins, which is not easy to do. For me, it's, you know, I just got by a pop-up. I don't know if you guys can hear that. But fighter of the year, if we're talking fight of the year, you know, I think you got to look the Tommy Coyle fight with Brazella. Sent that fight to me. It kept reminding me that fight versus Daniel Brazella back in February of the year for me. I haven't picked fighter of the year yet. I just think it's kind of time for boxing. And, you know, the sport, it's really a campaign that really stands out because fighters fight so seldomly. But to this fight, you know, Beltran seemed a little confused by the southpaw stance. And I thought that was interesting considering how he is facing it, how he faced it. You know, I thought that the way he fought, it was interesting, you know, that he's being touted as the best lightweight out there, you know, the best guy available. And that's kind of an indictment on the division. If it's a 33-year-old guy who's never really won a big fight, I mean, I guess he beat Ricky Burns, didn't get the decision, he got the draw.
Right.
But, I mean, other than that, he's known for being a sparring partner. You know, he's beaten Hank Lundy. That's his next biggest name. That's an indictment on the lightweight division, you know. But I think Terrence Crawford, I mean, just look at their styles. You know, Ray, as much as I like him and respect him, he's a journeyman boxer. And he's not really like I say boxer as in not his profession, but his style. He's not really a brawling guy. He'll get there and he'll throw punches and he will fight. But the way that he gets that done through a boxing style, a kind of patient style, a little bit of counterpunching, working his way in there intelligently, he needed to do the opposite of that in this fight. In order for him to beat Terrence Crawford, he was going to have to go in there and push, shove him around, show him who the journeyman guy was. And I say that with respect, the term journeyman. Somebody
right.
that is a master of their craft, who's been doing it a long time against top-level people. He's probably sparred better people than Terrence Crawford's fought. And, you know, he needed to show him that, and he didn't really at all. He took some chances later in the fight, and it was competitive, I guess. You know, it was like a person that was there told me, like, you know, it was one of the better, like, one-sided fights that they'd seen. But it was a one-sided fight. You know, Terrence Crawford hasn't been in a fight this year in which, you know, he wasn't really well matched. He really, you know, he wasn't in a fight this year that he was expected to lose, I don't think. Maybe Ricky Burns could have got him on a you know, some sort of a robbery, but I didn't think that was going to happen. I think it's hard to vote him that, you know?
Right, right. You know what I find very interesting
I'm not Ricky Burns, but go ahead. Sorry.
You know what I find interesting, and the more years that are added to the boxing life of HBO, the more we're starting to hear the loss of voice that the commentators, the loss of control of voice the commentators have now. Like, for instance, you know, you're hearing Jim Lampley, and you're hearing Roy Jones, and you're hearing Max Kellerman continuously trying to pound in our ears that, or convince us, that Ray Beltran was a power puncher, that he could change the fight with one punch. And I was like, I know these guys have seen Ray Beltran fight before. What are they, why are they mentioning that? Why do they keep saying that? Ray Beltran is a guy that needs volume. He's a guy that has to smother you. He's a guy that's got to be in that pocket, cornering you against the ropes, and he's got to throw punches. Now, he's never been a very accurate guy. He's a guy that will shoeshine you, and occasionally those punches will fit through the pockets. Now, Ray Beltran was throwing a beautiful right hand. When it did land, it did catch Crawford. But it also made me kind of wonder, because Crawford is now talking about moving up in weight, is how well does he do with guys that are not gun-shy, guys that are similar in size, and guys that do have hand speed in the heavier weight division? That's what makes it even more, you know, curious for me, is to see what happens from there. Now, but here's the thing that I thought that was even more interesting, is that the talk of Top Rank saying that Crawford could be possibly a name opponent for Manny Pacquiao. That only told me that as much as we want to believe that the thaw out of the Cold War between Golden Boy and Top Rank is no longer really in existence, I kind of tend to still believe that's not really true, because we both know, Gable, that Bob Arum still doesn't like to play with others in the sandbox. I see Crawford being protected. Why? Because there's big money there. If Crawford continues to dominate and look in great fashion, why would he risk his fighter with any Golden Boy fighters and losing a big money showdown with Manny Pacquiao, when we already know Manny has to have at least a bag of opponents, a small bag of marbles there to pick through. And if he doesn't get that big mega payday with Floyd Mayweather, the Crawford's got to be groomed up to look like the guy that could possibly give Manny Pacquiao a run for his money, having another undefeated guy, a slick guy, and a guy that can go southpaw as well. It all reads up to being a great matchup, but it's how they maneuver him in the heavier weight division to groom him up to Manny Pacquiao. I don't know what your thoughts about that, but that's my thinking.
I don't see them moving towards Manny so soon. I think that's all. It's just smart, you know. You link yourself to somebody that's good. You link that guy to your other star. That way
right.
You go, you know, he's a star. Look at, you know, he's in this kind of company, even though he's doing great in his own right. I mean, he's a draw. He's, you know, all the things you want a guy to be. But they're not going to put him in with Manny. Who he's going to face at 140, he's not going to fight any Golden Boy guys, because I don't think Danny Garcia, I think that's more of a Heyman guy than a we're going to find out in this next year who's Golden Boy, who's Heyman. And so that's a whole other thing off to the side. Who he's going to face next year, maybe, no, not a Mauricio Herrera. He's on the Heyman list. So I would say you're looking at resurrecting maybe Roberto Soto. Victor Postol is available. Although I think Soto might be on the other side now too. So Victor Postol, let's go with him. The winner of Rios Alvarado 3. Those bones will be rolled towards Terrence Crawford. You know, maybe Hank Lundy Delorme, that winner, probably, you know, that's an outsider. Lenny Zappa, you might have that guy thrown at him. I think you're kind of
right.
Getting the point, is that nobody of note, Ivan Redkoch, may be thrown into the mix. Those would be the guys that Terrence Crawford would be, you know, they'll just be recycled against him or thrown to the wolves in Ivan Redkoch's case. Because I just don't think he's that great. He's kind of raw, but he's not as good as Crawford. And they'll put him in there. But here's the real name that's been linked to Manny Pacquiao now also. That's under the Top Rank stable. That's probably the most viable guy, unless they want to give him like one fight at 140 to acclimate and then put him in with this. But it'll be Crawford Jesse Vargas next year, is what I'm thinking, because they've got that belt, the WBA belt. They can get it over to Crawford, who's a more valuable commodity than Jesse Vargas. He's a draw. He's got some pop. Press seems to like him. He can actually knock people out. Jesse's just been looking for power, and he hasn't found it, probably never going to. So that's probably the matchup that I think they'll be moving towards, maybe in the middle of the year, as opposed to Manny Pacquiao.
I could see the same roadmap for him too as well, you know. There's still a lot, like I said, there's still a lot of questions out there for Terrence Crawford to answer, especially moving up in weight. And I'm interested to see what brings in the 2015. Fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. I'm sorry, I'm eating popcorn, dude. I'm starving. I haven't eaten. I've been on the road all day today. And so I'm having popcorn at the same time. We got Freddie Rose, who's going to be calling in a short bit here. We're going to be asking him some questions. If you guys want to ask him a question, tweet us the question, and we will ask him over the air if we get a chance to. Like I said, we should be getting him on right now. Don't forget, every Monday you got the next round here on the Living Ring Network, and every Tuesday you got Tijuana Boxeo Radio on the app. Then every Thursday it's Living the Ring here, as with yours truly, Dave Duenas and Mr. Gabriel Montoya. But let's continue to talk boxing. Hey, I'll tell you what fight that, and I wrote an article about this. I'm not the greatest writer in the world, but I kind of jot down my ideas of what I think may happen and what I kind of see in the landscape of boxing. So I put out an article about Pascal and Kovalev, if that fight is to happen. You know, it's pending still from the IBF. And, you know, I got to tell you, man, that Kovalev, if he is the pick of the Fighter of the Year candidate, and I think that he's got a lot of rights of probably taking that label there, but he's going to, if he strolls into the whole 2015 with Pascal, I mean, dude, that's a fight right there that, to start off the year, that to me is a good way of starting off the year. It's a great way of starting it off.
Let me see if it's 5:15. Let me just check and see if Freddie's on the line, because I know he was going to call in pretty quick here. Sorry to cut you off there.
No problem. No problem at all. Fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. Certainly can. What was that, Gabriel?
Just to throw it out there too. If you're waiting on the line to listen to us ask Freddie Roach about Mickey Rourke, you can hang up now because we're not going to ask him about it. It's not something that's on the agenda. It is not his fighter. So that's just the way it is. But we're going to be asking about plenty of other things. Nothing else is off limits. So we're just waiting to grab him here on the line.
Nothing is off limits about the other thing. Mickey Rourke, I can care less about the whole Mickey Rourke thing. He's not really a fighter. Come on.
Well, it's an exhibition, and it's just kind of a strange thing. But I don't know. It's kind of upsetting. But if you want to hear my rant about that, then I suggest you download the next round or download the app, and you can listen to it on there. So while we try to check in on Freddie Roach, I look at this year. I don't know. It's kind of a lost year to me for boxing. I mean, I just don't see where we're going. I mean, I could see. I was a little bit of hope with. With De La Hoya, making his moves. But I think in a lot of ways it might end up just being kind of more on the same.
Hey, that was my fight of the year. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter. I put out there, that's my fight of the year, De La Hoya and Schaefer. Thought it was a great fight. It didn't necessarily have to be in the ring, but it still surrounds in the boxing realm. I thought that, to me, was the best fight. There's nothing else other than that really stood out for me to say, wow, this is it, you know, except for the Orlando Salido fight. That was a great fight. Oh, hold on. You know what? I believe we got Freddie Roach with us. Freddie, are you out there?
Hold on one moment. I'll get him on the line in one moment.
Great. Thank you. I can hear him in the backup.
That's it.
We're going to have Freddie Roach here live with us on the room right now. Hopefully we can get him in a much quieter place. Thanks, man. So we're listening to all the commotion there at the wild card. He is going to be speaking to us from the gym.
Hey, what's up, man? There's no more. What's up?
Hey, Freddie, how you doing, brother? This is Dave Buenas and Mr. Gable Montoya.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good,
what's
man.
Up, man? How are you, Freddie? Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
I can hear you're busy back there taking care of business. So, Freddie.
I'm not in the gym. You can't hear the gym from here. I'm downstairs.
Oh, downstairs. When we called, you could hear everybody at the gym. Yeah. You know?
That's amazing.
So, Freddie, I guess the burning question is that we're seeing a lot of jabs between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. And the many times we've had you on, we've always asked you about that fight. But realistically now, because it's been so long, do you think that fight's getting any closer of ever happening?
Well, I think the right people are talking to each other. I think, you know, Bob Arum told me that he was going to have a meeting with Moon Booth, the president of CBS. And I think the two guys that can do it are at least talking together. And... I'm a lot optimistic. I think that it's a good sign, but I'm still not sure if it's going to happen though.
Right. Let me ask you this. I mean, how do you guys keep yourself motivated in terms of fighting other fighters out there that are just put on the list to keep you guys busy? I mean, how do you keep you guys up to it, and knowing that the biggest fight in history is right there? But it's the other guys and the other team that just don't want to seem to play ball with you guys.
Yeah, you know, Manny's pretty good about that. And, you know, he knows that he's not going to sit around and wait for anybody. If that fight doesn't come, you know, we will stay busy with other fights and hopefully, you know, getting prepared for the big fight of the biggest fight of all time. But, you know, I told Manny last time I thought that the commercial he did and what he did in the ring was a little bit maybe embarrassing for Mayweather. And I told him, I said, instead of being a gentleman and just saying, you know, my promoter will pick who I fight next, I said, call him out every chance you get, because we've got to get something going here that the press is going to lead it, and he's going to come to the table and fight, you know. So I told, you know, I said, Manny, just every time you're on TV, do that commercial. Do it. You call him out. Embarrass him into fighting you somehow. And, you know, because we definitely want that fight. And
right.
We've done everything possible, I think, to make it happen. You know, he asked for a 60-40 split. We said, okay. We know he's like the A side of this fight. He's the undefeated guy still, but it's, you know, only until he gets in the ring with Manny Pacquiao, though.
And here's the thing, too, Freddie. This is Gabriel. You guys have been doing testing for the last few fights. I think the last three fights now. Is that part of the reason for that? Is to say, look, that hurdle doesn't exist. But also, I mean, I imagine it's to protect yourself. But one, I applaud you that you're doing it. But is that part of it? Is for Manny? Is to kind of try to erase what everybody says about him, and also just to get over that hurdle and just get this fight done.
Yeah, you know, we're doing everything possible to get over the hurdle and get this fight done. And you know, the thing is, right now we have to go after the young generation, because the only old generation guys out there are Mayweather and him. So, you know, we're going out, you know, Algeri, you know, everyone thought he was like the next Rocky. And, I mean, they made such a big deal about this young
right.
kid who beat Ruslan. And then, you know, I told him, believe me, Manny and Ruslan are many, many worlds apart. Manny's a lot better than you think. And I think they believe me now, but it took them a while to convince them.
You think Manny gets a bad rap? In some ways, people say, like Steve and I were talking about this, how people just think of him as like a dumb puncher or something when it comes to Mayweather. Oh, he's not as skilled as Mayweather. Do you think his boxing skills are really underrated? Because he's developed a lot, particularly since, I want to say, the Morales fights.
Yeah, his skills are really good. The thing is, Manny will go for it and go for a knockout, and sometimes when you go for it, you put yourself in harm's way to be hit. You know, and he walked into Sharvin Morales, but you know, he's been knocked out three times in his life, but he's not embarrassed. That's part of boxing. That's part of the sport.
Right.
If you don't think you get knocked out in this sport, you pick the wrong sport. And then Mayweather just carefully picks his opponents. I mean, why did they fight a rematch in that last fight? What demanded a rematch from that first one? The first one put me to sleep, and the second one put me to sleep even faster. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's not like he's fighting better opponents each time he fights. You know, we're trying to get the best guys we can out there. And, you know, sometimes, of course, that's difficult. But the thing is, you know, Algeri was a young, undefeated guy. And they made a big, you know, he's got a degree in this and that and so forth. Not that that counts in boxing, but, you know, it was a good, he had a good storyline. And, you know, we thought Manny, it was a good fight for Manny, and Manny took care of business. I thought Manny won every round. And, you know, I think he's over getting that shot that knocked him out. You know, he fought a very good fight, and he fought a better fight this time than last, but he's had two good ones in a row. And, you know, again, I think, you know, Floyd says he's undefeated and he's the best. But believe me, Sugar Ray Robinson and all those guys who have losses on their records, they learn
right.
from losing. Losing is not a bad thing sometimes. You know, the thing is, you get a much better lesson after losing a fight than you do winning a fight. So I think it makes you a better fighter down the line.
You know, a long time ago, back in 2012, when I was down at the Wild Card, Freddie, and I interviewed you, you had told me, and this is when the time when you guys were facing Cotto, Margarito, and Mosey, and all these guys, and you told me out of all those guys, Floyd Mayweather would be the easiest fight for you guys to take. Do you still believe that?
Yes, I do. I think, you know, He's hand chosen every one of his opponents. He's you know, he picks the right styles, and you know, we know he doesn't fight southpaws well. I think that's part of the reason why he's ducking us. And you know, a southpaw with power is dangerous. And you know, Manny showed the other night against Algeri that his legs are great. He was on his toes for 12 straight rounds, and I don't think Mayweather can do that anymore. I think he's getting old, and I think his legs are gone, and it's just a matter of time before we knock him out.
I want to jump back to also this card, because you were with Antonio DeMarco, who just lost to Jesse Vargas.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jesse Vargas's corner is Memo Heredia, who was in Marquez's corner. Although I heard he didn't get a visa and wasn't over there in Macau. I'm not sure if that's – you could probably verify if he was there or not. But he said his father, who's a chemist, in his place is what I was understanding. Again, I don't know if he made it over there, but that's what I was hearing. So just in that context – do you think it's time to that we've talked about this in the past, and maybe we just shouldn't let it die, since you're one of the most vocal people about it. Do you think it's time that maybe the sanctioning bodies start to say, look, if you have our title, and especially if you're working with somebody with the past, you need to randomly test and you need to figure out a way to pay for it? Do you think that's fair?
That's definitely something we have to do in the sport. I mean, you know, these guys going in there with like, you know, all this acne on their back and so forth, and it's a dead sign of using drugs and so forth. We need to clean the sport up for sure. And you know, and you're right. I mean, they should be randomly tested at all times, as long as they're active champions or fighters are rated in the top 10. Something has to be done, because it's just, you know, it's just guys are getting away with stuff too much. And you know, it's you know, I don't really know a lot about the drug issue, because you know, my fighters pretty much stay away from that. Manny Pacquiao, you know, if I can get him to take a vitamin C, that's very difficult. So, you know, it's something that we have to, you know, now they're calling us out for a fight. He says he beat four of my fighters in a row. Even though the four fighters that he did beat work out of my gym, but only one of them is one of my fighters, and that's DeMarco. And, you know, Tony was going through a tough time. His sister's dying of cancer. She's 13 years old. He was very sad during training camp. I almost canceled a fight a couple times, but I thought I could motivate him and you know, told him to do it for his sister, because that, you know, it means a lot to her. So he was very... He wasn't himself. I thought that fight was there for him, but he just couldn't pull the trigger that night. He just had too much on his mind. So, you know, that's part of the sport, and we lost that. So, but now he's talking about fighting Pacquiao next. I don't think he's really ready for that, but if that's something they want to do, I'm sure if Mayweather doesn't come to the table, we need to fight somebody, and he could be one of the next opponents for sure.
Let me ask you about.
Yeah. Oh,
go ahead. No, go ahead, Gabriel. I'll come back. You sure?
I just wanted to wrap it. So then, in that case, that'd be a tested fight then, no doubt, like an extra tested fight.
Well, yeah, you know, any time they say all the title fights are tested now, and we did random testing, and they came to the Philippines a couple times, and they came to China, we did all the testing. So it will definitely be a testing fight, yes.
Cool. Thanks, Freddie. I appreciate that.
Freddie, what are your thoughts about, speaking about testing, is you? I don't know if your people have ever told you, but Paulo Malignaggi continues to really kind of just bash Manny Pacquiao about the testings and why there should be testing. What do you think that all stems from? You know, I mean, he's a guy that went to your gym, trained out of your gym, but then leaves and then still at it.
You know, he was like a good friend of ours, and I mean, we sparred together and so forth. I don't know where in the world he got that Manny would do drugs, because Manny is like one of the cleanest guys in the world that I know. And he, you know, any testing we've ever done, we've always been cleared. And Yeah, I don't know where Pauly went there, because I did think Pauly was a good friend of the Wild Cards. You know, he had a good run out of here, but yeah, I guess jealousy is bigger than that, and he's a little bit jealous that Manny Pacquiao is still going on, and he's not.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks have pointed that out to him on Twitter, but you know, Freddie, if the Miguel Cotto and Saul Canelo fight, I would have to say in 2015, if you talk about big mega fights in history, this is a big mega fight. I think it's going to break numbers. I think it's going to draw a huge crowd of Latinos out there. Do you think that fight, which should be happening in 2015, do you think that also put pressure on Floyd to kind of show that he has some interest with Manny? Or no?
Definitely so, because that is a big fight, and we need the best to fight the best, and that's one of the, and those two guys are the best fighting the best in the division. I think it's a great fight. I think it's great competition. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Floyd. And, you know, I look forward to this fight because I look forward to challenges and getting Cotto ready for that fight. Miguel called me last week and told me December 7th he'll be in town. We're going to work for a couple of weeks just to get some of the cobwebs off, because we've had a little bit of layoff. So before Christmas, we will be training at the Wild Card. And just vaguely, I'm going to start a game plan over that particular opponent, because I definitely feel that's going to happen, and I think that's going to be a huge, huge fight. And, I mean, it's one of the fights the world wants to see. You know, it's a lot of love-hatred between the Puerto Ricans and the Mexicans. It's a great fight, and I look forward to getting ready for that. And Miguel's really turned the corner with me. We've had great results in his last two fights. He's a dedicated, hard worker. I mean, I love working with this guy, and I think that's the fight I want to see. And So I think the rest of the world is right with me there.
Game plan against Canelo, do you think it's a lot different from, you know, when you guys face Martinez?
Yeah, it definitely is. The game plan will be a lot different. We do have to make a lot of adjustments and so forth. And I don't think it's not very, very complicated. But the thing is, he's a big puncher, and he does have knockout power, and we respect that. But I think if we take him into the late rounds, he does fade a little bit, and that's something we have to really take care of. And I think, going to the body early and breaking this guy down will be a tough chore, but something that I think we can do it. So, I have the game plan in my head already. I've watched a lot of tape on these guys, and I'm ready for the Mayweather fight, and I'm ready for the Canelo fight for sure.
Last thing, Freddie, everybody knows you're high-profile guys. In 2015, who are we going to talk about in the Freddie Roach stable that we're not talking about just yet now?
Well, Shimming's going to make a little bit of noise because he's doing really well with his career. He's becoming a better fighter all the time. I just got to get him to get a little more confidence in himself. In the last two rounds of the last fight, he told me I'm going to run. And I said, what are you going to run for? I said, go out there and knock this guy out. And Shimming, he has that amateur style. It's still in his head a little bit. And but he is becoming a better fighter. But I think the prospect that I really like, and I really think is going to be a superstar, is Frankie Gomez. He is for real. And I think next year is going to be his year. He's going to really shine. And guys like Amir Khan and those, they start watching out, because we'll take him right now. So. Wow. That's how much I think of Frankie Gomez.
Jeez, wow. Well, hopefully, I like Frankie. He's a tough interview. He's a real shy kid, but
he is shy. He's very quiet.
Steve speaks highly of him, though, of what you've done with him down there, that you've really smoothed him out and got him fighting a tighter punching frame, all that stuff. He's looking real good, man. I'm excited to see him.
Yeah, I just need a little more activity out of him because he'll fight a fight and he'll take a couple months off, and I want him a little more activity in his career would be a lot better for him, because downtime for fighters is really the worst thing in the world for fighters, just getting overweight and so forth. But the thing is, Golden Boy is doing the best they can to keep him as busy as possible. But it's just it's very difficult to get him fights. Not too many people really want to fight him right now. So, but he's getting better and better all the time. And he gave Pacquiao some great work last camp, and he was really a very good asset for us for that fight.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping by, Freddie. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy, busy guy, but we always love having you through, especially towards the end of the year. So happy holidays to you, and safe ending to the year, and we'll catch up with you in 2015.
Okay, sounds great, guys. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hey, all right, Freddie, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There
you
go.
Get the butter
our...
off your fingers there? Trying to hit the mute button, but you kept slipping.
You know what? It's hard to talk with popcorn in your mouth. I swear.
It's really.
I'm all grubbing.
Really, I
have
that trouble.
Away.
I have that problem every day.
Right. I'm all grubbing away, listening to what he's saying. I'm almost forgetting that I'm on the radio. I was about to start like, yeah, but and then I remind myself, oh, dude, you're on the radio. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Here on Leaving in Radio, let's talk some boxing. Let's talk about past weekend fight. Let's talk about future fights coming up this weekend. There's some fights that are going to be coming up. But let's pass in some fight fans really quick here on the show here, Gabriel. Hey, Freddie had some interesting things to say. I knew he still
said Frankie Gomez. That's the quote of the interview. Frankie Gomez could beat Amir Khan right now.
Well, yeah. That's a pretty big, bold statement. Yeah.
That's a bold statement.
Very bold statement, well, we'll get to that right now. Let's pass into my fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? CT.
CT, what's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Gabe?
Good, good.
I'm doing good, man. How you doing? Nice to hear from
pretty
you.
Pretty good. I just want to talk about Terrence Crawford. I think his skill set is definitely good enough at 140, but I think you guys make a good point is how is he going to look against the elite level at 140. We saw how he looked against Prescott, and he did pretty well dealing with a Prescott that's kind of a little bit past it, but does have power. But we saw that, Crawford does have the skills to go up to 140 in the size, but when he gets to that elite level, we'll see how he's going to look. I mean, Kolobnikov, we have Vargas out there. I think he does well against both of those guys. But I was on a talk show recently, on another talk show, and someone made a good point, which I'd like to point out as well. His defensive skills are pretty good, but he does not really move his head too well. He kind of uses his athletic ability with feet movement to kind of get away from punches. You know, how's it going to look as far as when he handles somebody with a lot of speed? Well, we saw when he looked at his Gamboa, and Gamboa was able to hit him with punches. But when he faces people that are naturally bigger than him or his size, how's he going to deal with those type of punches?
You know, it always seems like the taller guys always have that problem, They don't. They're able to pull back a little bit, and they make the shorter guys miss the punches when they're trying to throw a hook or even throw their straight right. They've gotten away with it, and who's made it more of a craft is like Vladimir Klitschko. If you watch him now, they're able to pull their heads back and add inches to their height and stuff. And Crawford I think he's getting away with that right now. I'm not sure if you can do that though. Like I said, when you're moving up, because you are going to be facing heavier guys, you are going to be facing guys that are going to be equal in height. It's interesting to find out where Crawford is at. Really in his stage of his career. I mean, everybody was really up and on about what he did with Beltran, which was a really dominant performance. But at the same time, you got to sit there and go, well, if the guy's not really throwing punches, and you could see that when he got in that pocket, see, that's what told me a lot. when he got in that pocket, and I don't want to take no credit away from Crawford, man, because I thought he did a great performance. But at the same time, you gotta point out some things that are very questionable. Beltran got in the pocket, and he never threw a punch. He kind of just froze. He froze on stage. The cameras and the lights, they came on, and he just froze up there for a moment, you know. He would have his spurts, but they were not enough to really answer questions with Crawford because, two, Beltran, when he did throw, you have to admit, he did land, and he was snapping the head back of Crawford, but Showtime, I mean, HBO wasn't giving him the credit. All they keep talking about was Beltran had this one-punch knockout power, and it made, you know, it almost kind of made you feel like, yeah, he does have one-punch knockout power. But then you go back and look on tape of Ray, he's like, he doesn't. He never had. He's never possessed that, you know.
He had a one-punch offense in the fight.
Right.
That's about all he had was one-punch offense, not a one-punch
absolutely
knockout power. But, that's, you know, Max, he just so tries to write the narrative before it begins, while it's happening, afterwards, he's saying shit that just really didn't happen, is never going to happen, has no chance of happening. But it would be really cool and better for our story and our hero, the A-side, if these things could, you know? More and more, I just listen to him, and I don't understand what the hell he's talking about most of the time. I really don't. Like, Roy Jones even, the selling of Roy Jones as a viable boxing trainer, having really no notable wins other than this Jesse Vargas fight, which, I'm sorry, he actually, Harold Letterman was like, I've never seen him, Jesse Vargas, look better than tonight. That's just, you know, he looked
that's
so good.
That's just ridiculous.
No, he actually looked worse than I'd ever seen him.
Yeah.
He looked more beat up. It was a tougher fight. I don't think Jesse would disagree. Added to which, he had acne all over him. Now, actually, he looked worse than I'd ever seen him. Sorry. And I wasn't the one that brought up acne tonight.
Right.
I don't know if anybody else noticed that. The trainer of the fighter that lost to that guy brought up the acne. Tell me again that I'm the guy that keeps bringing it up. But the whole narrative on HBO, I just, you know, I mean, it's just kind of freaky to me. I mean, they're all connected, you know. They all work together. They all are represented by the same person, I believe, or most of them are. And it seems strange to me. There is a narrative going on there. And I, you know, the Roy Jones cam last week of him training and him just saying, like, you know, there you go, there you go, there you go, like 10 times. Yeah, newsflash. That's actually not good instructions. I don't know. But I digress.
We talked about this, you know, because we didn't have a chance to do the show after because, you know, our show fell on Thanksgiving Day. Me and you talked about this off the air. I mean, a couple days after it happened. And I told you, I said, the only thing that I saw that Roy Jones brought to Jesse Vargas' camp is to show him how to showboat. That was it. There was really nothing there. And then I keep hearing Roy telling Jesse to do things that wasn't his character. You know, don't get hit. You know, use your defense. Don't get hit. And I was like, dude, this is a guy that likes to get hit. He doesn't know any other way of not getting hit when he's in the fight. You know, it was just their whole commentary just throws me off. But,
well, you know what's interesting about that him saying that, use your defense, is that when you watch Jesse in the gym, and this is like, he's a trippy guy. He loves defense. He loves to lay on the ropes, spend a lot of his time working from the ropes. He's very good off the ropes. He counters actually quite well from that position. But that seems to be like he's more comfortable leading you around the ring, making you miss a bunch of punches than hitting you. I think that may be why Floyd liked him. But it's very, you know, but so watching him say that to him, I was like, because he wanted to be more like he is in the ring. And he does showboat a little bit in there. It was weird. It was like Roy was bringing the guy from the gym into the fight finally. But it wasn't that effective. It wasn't very good.
No.
You know?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. CT, we got anything else for you, brother?
Yeah, I just want to speak a little bit on those fights this weekend. I'm looking forward to the Lorne and Lundy fight. I think it's going to be very exciting, as well as the Lemieux and Rosado. I actually see Delaney and Lundy both hitting the canvas in that fight. I think it's going to be exciting. I think Lundy's going to definitely have to get inside, do things that Mayfield wasn't able to do. And I think Lundy's going to pull a decision win over Delaney. He's going to take Delaney deep. And I think he has a better stamina, better ability. So I see Lundy winning that fight. And I see Lemieux beating Rosado. I think Rosado's cuts doesn't hold up in this fight. And Rosado has a lot of lapses in the ring. I see either high or low. and it comes to a point where a round he does well, and then the next round he doesn't. You know, it's kind of like he's never persistent in a fight.
You know,
he needs to stay focused a little bit more.
You know what pissed off a lot of people? When I barely started leaving the ring, I had called Ricardo Mayorga the cockroach of boxing. The dude just wouldn't go away. You can't kill him off. And I got to tell you, who takes that title now, Rosado, man, that guy just won't go away. You know, how many times has he lost? He's got what? What's his streak now for losses under his belt in a boxing match? But anyways,
well,
go ahead, Gabriel.
I'm looking it up. Although, you know, to
he
his
did
credit,
win the,
I mean, a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah, he was winning that fight, the Jay Leon Love fight. And I don't understand why, you know, he got overturned because of the Love's positive drug test. But, I mean, he won that fight. Everybody feels that way.
Right.
Yeah,
but
you know
what?
He's on a 3-fight losing streak, not counting that fight. It would be 4 if you counted that fight.
Right.
You know,
but you know what?
I mean,
I love the guy. I actually enjoy watching him. I think he brings value of entertainment. He does come, you know, and try to win. He's not one of those guys just going to lay down on you. But, CT, I got to agree with you that, you know, the wars that he's been in and the style that he brings, it's always going to have the same result, which is he's going to get in there with Lemieux, who's got a big punch, who can box, and could possibly outwork him. The only thing I question with Lemieux is that can his chin hold up to Rosado? Because Rosado will throw in combinations, and he will hold his ground. It makes it a really interesting fight. I haven't really made my pick yet, but I think it makes it a great interesting fight. You know, and then going with Hank Lundy, I tell you what, from the Hank Lundy that fought John Molina Jr., this one that's going in against Damari is completely different. I think he's polished up a lot more, and it makes it much more of a fun fight, man. But, yeah, I think you're on point, brother. I think you're on point. I'm going to put you back on hold, CT. Thank you, brother.
Thanks.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code. I'm going down the line, okay? So bear with me. 714, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, it's Lenny the Fight Smith.
Lenny, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's going on, guys? You know, I just tuned in. I'm not sure if you guys talked about it earlier in the show, but the Crawford, or, I'm sorry, the Pacquiao pay-per-view numbers being so low, I feel like they're almost at a point with these low pay-per-view numbers where they can make more money selling them or selling advertising time on free TV.
They were what? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. What'd you say? They were selling what?
I feel like they're almost at a point where they can make more money selling, like, ad time on free TV, like putting them on Fox and ad time on the number of viewers they get.
Right? I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think – I don't know about you, but I kind of knew that it was going to be low. Here was a name that wasn't really recognizable. Let's be honest, the esteem of opponents, even how big of a star is, the esteem kind of goes, it kind of does die out if you don't have the right opponent across from you. Where was the real threat that Chris brought to the table in the pay-per-view fight? Not really much, you know? We knew he could box.
I bet he can outcook Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
He makes a mean shake. But that's, yeah, you're right. There was no danger factor. As much as they put him out there, but you notice there was no highlight reels of anybody he knocked out. You know? What were you going to do? I mean, the guy's got 9 knockouts. How do you sell that this guy, you know, is the guy? I mean, I think getting it to 300,000, that's a good question. Could they make more money with advertising, with everything that they poured into it? It's hard. I mean, you know, putting Manny Pacquiao on free TV, I mean, who's really going to, are the networks going to really pay, you know, are advertisers really going to pay for that? I mean, we're a niche sport. And you know, the further I get away from being a boxing writer, where every day I had to be checking the news wire and constantly just obsessed, like, did something happen? You know, did this guy do that? Or, you know, just always watching and always your world becomes, oh, you know, boxing is so huge. But, you know, this dream of boxing fans that we can go back to network, and it'll heal all the ills, all the damage we've done by moving to pay-per-view and moving out of the regular cities, but moving to Vegas instead. I think it's kind of a pipe dream. It takes a while to train people back to believing something is worthwhile. And like I said, the further I go away from being a boxing writer, the more I realize that there's a whole lot of people in this world that don't give one shit about boxing, don't really care at all, and actually kind of think that what we do is a bit barbaric, watching people fight for money. So, I wonder if putting Pacquiao, if they could make more money selling regular commercials so that people would watch him. I mean, would they place it at the same time? Would they play it at 9 o'clock at night? Would they be able to put him in really prime time? That's, all those things would affect how much advertising money really comes in. I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, the advertisement money, too, is that, we got to remember that these guys, they know how to crunch numbers. They're going to look at everything. They're going to look at the whole thing. They're going to try it out, and if it doesn't draw, if it's not able to pull the numbers they're looking for, they'll drop it. Even with a big name like Manny, you always got to have that other character in the story to sell it. You don't write a script without having two main characters in it, and those two main characters are always going to make a plot to thick. So that's something that they have to look at. Top Rank has to find that out. And you could tell that they're reaching. I mean, let's be honest. They're really reaching. You get Chris Algieri on there. Now Jesse Vargas talks. And then they're attaching Charles Crawford to Manny's name. They're reaching. They're trying to find that other character. It's kind of hard. I agree with you. Taking it back.
When the drop-off is from Floyd Mayweather, the best fighter in the game or boxer in the game, to Jesse Vargas or Terrence Crawford, one guy that fights at 140 and shares a belt with somebody, and the other guy fights at 135, there's a problem at the top. There's a problem.
Absolutely. There's a major problem. Same thing with Floyd. Floyd is not that clean himself right now. There's a major, major problem in finding a dance partner. Lenny, we got anything else for you, brother?
No, man. Thanks, guys.
Okay, brother. Putting you back on hold, man.
Thank you, sir.
Call. Let's go with area code 787. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, it's Rob. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you good. Yes. Rob, what's going on, brother?
All right. How you guys doing, man?
Good, man.
I'm doing good. I'm on vacation. I'm having a good time.
I've been on vacation for 4 years.
No, I'm not talking about my job. I'm on vacation.
Yo, man, I was going to come on here, and I was like, I woke up today, I was like, I'm not going to hate. I'm not going to hate on Crawford. I'm going to leave it in the ring. I'm going to give him credit. And then Dave is over here dissecting the fight, breaking it down, saying what I really wanted to say. And I'm like, shit, now I don't got nothing to say. Now I really can't hate. What I'm saying? But, it's just like Dave said, about the questions and the questions being asked, and that's all I want from fighters today. And him going to 140, unless he starts cherry picking or Top Rank starts positioning him for, kind of putting him on the bench and feeding him easy fighters just so they can build him up a little bit and then just feed him to Pacquiao. It's kind of like you just stuff the turkey and you just let everybody eat from it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of, I feel like, what they might do with him. But the questions are going to be answered just like Danny at 147, unless, we all know how Heyman and that shit works, but I feel like he can't avoid too much competition there, so it's going to be tough for him at 147. But I was trying to be really crucial on some fighters, like Triple G. It's getting to the point where I hear his fans talking so much and I'm not seeing the competition, but now that he's fighting Murray, if you look at Murray's career from a different perspective, he could very well be the dude at the top of the division right now. If the Martinez fight had gone a different way, would Cotto have gone up and fight Murray? We don't know. You know what I'm saying? So he Murray could be the dude right now. So that fight gives a little bit, from my point of view, gives more respect to GGG for taking that fight. And same thing with Kovalev and Pascal. I've been wanting Kovalev to fight somebody who, from the Hopkins fight. Hopkins, it's like boxing is a game where fighters age, but fights age fighters even more. And who knows what happened to Hopkins? That just wasn't the Hopkins I knew that I hated for so long. I used to hate Hopkins, and Dave knows because back in the day, I used to try to shit on Hopkins every chance I got. But, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well,
that
well,
wasn't
Boston
the Hopkins
like,
I knew. But
Boston,
now that he's fighting Pascal. Yeah.
Well, boxing's a lot like love, you know. There's somebody for everybody. And I think what happened to Hopkins that night was he met that guy. He met the guy that didn't give a shit who he was. And the guy that just all he, you know, it's like that Bugs Bunny cartoon where those two guys are stranded on the island and a fat guy and a skinny guy, and they look at each other and one turns into a hamburger and the other guy turns into a hot dog. Every time Kovalev looked at Hopkins, he saw a big sign that says, "This is what you want. Take it." And he just treated him that way for 12 rounds, you know? And nobody's ever treated Hopkins that way, you know?
Cloud
and
said he was
going to
treat him that way, but Cloud got treated that way. I don't know what the fuck Cloud was doing in that fight.
Yeah. getting the hell beat out of him. Yeah. Oh, yeah, but in that fight, yeah, he didn't. I don't know. Tavares, unfortunately, turned out to be a guy that his sell was better than his punch, you know? And it was better than his efforts. And it was kind of a bummer because I really quite liked talking to him. But every time I saw him fight at that top level, he just looked. He also died on the vine. I think the best Tavares Cloud was a Tavares Cloud we never saw. A guy that was having managerial issues and not fighting very often and could have been a worthwhile dude, you know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he was a problem all along, but I don't think so.
Because, like, the interview you guys did, when you guys had him on, it was, like, a really exciting call. He was like, I'm not going to let Hopkins do that shit. I'm gonna go in, I'm gonna beat his ass, and sounded like he was like promising, but he obviously got his ass kicked that fight. Somebody gave him the wrong letter. But Pascal looks really Pascal. You know, Pascal's the one dude who's like a dark horse. I feel like at any given day he could beat anybody in that division with his talents. You know, he's fought Kyle Froch. We know he has a chin. We know that he's tough. He's dislocated his shoulder multiple times in a fight, pops it back in, goes back out there. You know, he dropped Hopkins a few times in a losing effort. So we know Pascal's going to come to fight, but this is what I wanted to see from Kovalev. So now I can, like, chill on Kovalev, and I can relax and know that question is going to be answered. And that's really all I want from these fighters now. Cause
you
Andrade,
know, I really hope Pascal comes to fight because that means he's going to get knocked out. I can't
wait to
see that fight.
Pascal's gonna go in there. He's like an erratic fighter. He has that weird style, that wannabe Roy Jones style, but it's entertaining. But there's guys like I gotta say this. Andrade came on, boo boo, came on, talked hella shit.
Right.
Okay. He talked hella shit, got me on his side, and then he signs with Charlo, or I don't know if it was signed, but the fight was talked about, and it's like a month away, and then he backs out. Type of bullshit is that? I just couldn't, like, man, that's the shit that puts a fighter on my bad side. And I don't know what happened with
that.
I don't know if you guys know.
That's also the thing, though, that is the problem with modern media, the boxing media. And I don't, I'm a radio show host at this point. Like, I don't, so I say this as a fan that wants more information. And we don't get the full story. We get a little bit over here. We get a little over there. Nobody does three independent sources. Let's find out the real deal. Let's get the contract. Let's see what the real offer was. It's all half-assed reporting. And so we end up blaming the fighter because he's turning down $300K, but we don't know how that was being whacked up. We saw Nicole Duva of Main Events kind of pointing out and kind of, in my opinion, trying to say, hey, media, pick up on what I'm saying. Go ask these questions. Go find out the answers. Because something ain't right here. I'm not so sure I blame Demetrius for that. It could be a case of that. It could not be. But boxing media just kind of sucks, you know?
Another thing
they
for
really
me
don't.
Another thing for me was that if you want to make real money, promoters don't do the best job of selling fights, and I understand that. Promoters definitely do not do the, but they kind of do the rinkety dink. Oh, this guy has this record, and this guy's explosive, and they use the same cliche lines over and over again in the trailers, whatever, and they throw them out there. But if you're a fighter and you want to make money, you got to sell the fight. And nobody. Charlo's a real boring personality. First of all, he doesn't do first. Somebody as you know that has talent, he's really boring personality wise. And Andrade there was no selling of the fight going on. I didn't hear nothing about that. And maybe that's why.
Well,
maybe
that's
because
how you
the deal
know
was not
a fight's not real. Yeah, that's how you know a fight's not real, is when people aren't really excited and talking about it. That's one of the ways. I mean, it's, you know, you notice, I don't know, it's just one of those things. I'd like to know what that deal was, though, what was really offered. It was sort of like the confusion, and I'd like to know this, too, in that, like, Artie Palullo of Banner Promotions said, you know, well, this is the only guy we could get, and everybody turned us down for $500,000 to fight, you know, with Provodnikov. But the other side of it was that there was an HBO offer that's apparently out there that was reported, I believe, by Kevin Ioli. But it was like one line in the story. It wasn't a full explanation. He didn't get somebody to HBO talking. Like, I think that should be, and that's something that I was experiencing when I was working actively on the beat, is the guy that will tell you everything, but that won't go on the record. I don't really have a lot of, you know, I have several sources. I guess I still have them, because as long as you don't betray them, you're good. You can maybe criticize the fact that they don't want to come out, but and still keep them. But I still talk to people in the industry, and I still get the old, oh, but don't report it. I'm like, well, I don't freaking write anyways. But it always kind of irks me in that there's certain things I can't even use. That's why I don't even argue with fans anymore, because it's like, at first I'd have to educate you so you could have a point of view, and then we'd argue, you know?
Yeah.
That drives me crazy. It's like that one little line in Ioli's story of, well, there was apparently an offer for Herrera to fight on HBO for a lot of money against Provodnikov, but Provodnikov's side didn't want to do that. That kind of stuff, like, we just needed, you know, I'm on my little soapbox here, but it drives me crazy as a person that I got into the internet, like boxing writing, because as a boxing fan that was looking for information on the internet, found a forum, kind of got into it, and kind of went, well, maybe I can do this the way I'd like to see it. And so I did that for the next almost decade. It drives me nuts not being able to find out the truth of these things, or finding out the truth but not being able to report it. I don't know, the whole thing just kind of drives me crazy.
Reporting, your shot's fired. Fuck Ellie Sekbak.
Yeah,
all right.
Single-handedly, the guy turned the word reporting into an ironic phrase, right?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Man.
Oh,
I remember when I first got on the beat,
brother.
Right?
All right, man.
I remember first getting on the beat, Dave, and in Los Angeles, and Ellie was there, and I thought he was actually kind of a mentally challenged fan at first with a camera.
Oh.
That was like super fan.
Right.
I'm not kidding. And then I realized that's just the way he talks and behaves. But then later I realized, oh, this guy's like, he's like media. But I remember we'd be in the scrum, and I won't name the writers, but people that we all read and like respected people that had been there long, you know, before the internet, you know, and you know, when we were scouring things in the ring or whatever, they'd be there. And just like he would speak and they would all make eye contact and like roll their eyes. Like, oh, we got to sit through this guy's questions. And I didn't realize he worked for AOL, you know, Fanhouse at the time. But it's funny to see Ellie now as kind of a quote-unquote insider who can get backstage and do all that. And speaking as a guy that asks hard questions and uncomfortable questions on the beat, you don't get to be that insider guy being that. You know, you have to be more like Ellie. But it's funny to me how it's very telling to me that was not very far removed from the internet kind of becoming a thing, and then, you know, websites,
you know,
probably soon after I only went to Yahoo, you know, like maybe a year, and how far we've come since then, like 7-8 years later, and it's the norm, and being a shitty journalist is the norm.
You know, what's sad is that, you know, when I met him, I heard his questions, and I remember I was doing my interview and he was like kind of staring, and I didn't know who he was and he didn't know who I was, but you know, when he would ask his questions, it always related to Pacquiao. Would you fight Manny Pacquiao? Would you fight Floyd Mayweather? And everybody would laugh, not just the writers or video bloggers out there, but even the fighters and the trainers. And to this day, like, I talk to certain people, and they'll say, like, oh, so-and-so try to come into the gym, I just try to avoid it. And this is a fighter or a trainer telling me this, you know? And he comes down to where – what it comes down to me is how I look at him – is I got nothing against him, you know. I give him all the power of where he's at now and stuff. But it to me, I kind of feel bad for him, because he's that one character that they're not laughing with you. They're laughing at you still, you know. And it's kind of sad. And then you got certain people that do use him because they know they can get away with it, because Ali's not that guy that's going to stand up for the truth. He's the guy that wants to be part of the crowd. And he's not the only one. We see a lot of websites like that. I mean, there's this one website. I don't know them personally, but
yeah.
You see them. Everything evolves around kissing the industry's ass because they want to be part of that popular crowd, you know. And I'll give you a perfect example. Let me ask you this. Let me ask the listeners right now that are tuning in, and we'll try to get to your calls right now. You can call in 347-215-7598, and you can tweet at us right now. But Gronovich and Valdez, was that a really one-sided fight that people watched? Because I saw a very close fight. You know, I saw Jason really putting up a fight. I saw him having the early rounds, and he did gas out towards the later rounds. But the Garcia cheerleaders, they just kind of mustered all over it and made it seem like this was not even close. I mean, it was so bad. I mean, if you got to talk about HBO commentators, you certainly got to talk about the way the Garcia fanboys are too, because Garcia doesn't seem he can do any wrong. And that's what I mean is that, you know, it's just not the LA Sapbacks of the world. It's also fans as well, is that they're so caught up because of the fact that they're able to have a drink with the guy I'm just pointing this out because this was a fight that happened. Okay. I'm not picking on Garcia. I got nothing against him. You know, I like the guy and stuff, even though he lied a few times, but you know, that's boxing, right? But there's so much bias in the sport now, you know, and I've always said that the internet has really kind of ruined and dumbed the way the fans look at fights, because they kind of forget they need to be subjective to what fighters are doing. They got to be subjective of what's happening in the ring. They got to be subjective of what's happening outside the ring, you know. And even though some folks say you guys are biased, you know, you guys are always talking about PDs. You guys are always talking about Elham. You guys are always doing this. If you go back and you read what I wrote this past what yesterday was posted today, and thanks Brian Fox for editing it for me, man. You know, because like I said, I'm not a writer. I just jot my thoughts and stuff. But you know, I try to put a perspective of, even though Stevenson is on the outside looking in and seeing what Coble and Pascal are doing in terms of reaching to become stars in the sport of boxing at the light heavyweight division, you got to look at what is Heyman really doing, because this is a guy that doesn't just glance at the chessboard. He looks at the chessboard and sees what he can pawn and how he can move his king and his queen and his soldiers and stuff, you know. So I give him credit where credit is due. It's not, and I even said in the article, it's not beneficiary to us as fight fans, but it certainly is in business terms, you know. So I think that's where a lot of us have fallen apart, and you can hear frustrations and stuff, and then you're seeing guys not getting a fair shake, because in my opinion, Jason Valdez should have gotten a little bit more credit in what he was doing. He was getting caught in those later rounds, but Gronovich wasn't completely dominating. Come on, you know, I mean, the kid Jason,
dude,
he's Puerto Rican, but he was fighting his heart back, you know, and they made it just seem like this guy laid down. You know, and it was
they
bad.
Should change change Twitter's name to Group Mind during boxing matches, because it's pretty amazing. Like, if somebody popular says this is what's happening, or the Twitter feed of HBO says this is what's happening, generally people will bite and say, hey, this is happening. And it's almost like they're not really watching the fight. They're more just watching Twitter than the actual event. Because, you know, I watch all the fights. This weekend I'll actually get a chance to watch the fights live, but a lot of times I've been doing a show for the past month. I don't get to watch fights live, so I watch them Monday. So I avoid Twitter, or I'll go back and kind of look over the feed later on and see what people thought of the fight. And I was really surprised, having seen that fight, watched it Monday, you know, afternoon, and looking at the feed, and everybody's saying what a robbery it was. Robert Garcia, who spent most of the fight telling his fighter he's losing, tweets out a photo saying, we all know who really won. I saw a lot of gloves and elbows, you know, the punches that his guy was landing. I didn't see a lot of flush shots. Every now and again, I don't give credit, because you're moving forward. The sport's called boxing, and it's not called moving forward. You know, so the guy just kind of rolling that way, throwing punches that are getting blocked. And, you know, the kid had a weird way of getting out of the right or getting hit by the right. It's like the same thing you were talking about earlier, Dave. It was like a tall guy that never learned how to duck under a shot because generally he's fighting kids that he's taller than. And so he's had this bad habit that nobody ever fixed where he kind of rolls his head to the side while winging a wide shot. I mean, it's a knockout
right.
waiting to happen. But in this case, he was landing his counter left hook. Maybe it wasn't – I mean, it was just his flush. There were shots where it was like, oh, look at this right hand by Gradovich, and then, you know, Velez is landing – a left hook off of, you know, out of it, or, you know, kind of a flailing hand, but still, I didn't really understand that, but yeah, it was a much closer fight. I saw Gradovich. Yeah, body shots like all night long. I had Gradovich up by winning a point.
I had him the same thing, you know, and I give Garcia credit because he never lied to his fighter. He told him this fight is close. We're losing the fight. You got to pick it up. And that was great advice for him to keep his fighter motivated, you know, but I sit there and I go,
yeah.
man, and I text you. Remember that after you were telling me you're watching the fight, I text you. I said, you know, if Beltran, I think it was you. I said, if Beltran had Garcia in his corner, I can guarantee you all the Twitter fanboys would have been saying Beltran was winning and Crawford is running. This was a robbery because it's not, they're not being subjective at all. It's all about, well, I like this guy. It's the same thing what happened with, like, Alfredo Angulo when he quit with Laura. He didn't quit. I like the guy, you know, and they pick and choose and stuff. And, and I'm being subjective about the fact that it was a good fight. But, man, it was a lot closer than what people were giving credit. It was a lot closer when people were saying this was a robbery. It wasn't. It was not a robbery. Come on. You got to give that kid, Jason, some credit there. He did a hell of a job, you know, hell of a job. And but I'll tell you really quick, man, everybody hates Monday rant really fast, man. And I'll start passing in people here on Leaving the Ring. Guys, can we stop the whole Mexican thing? You know, because a guy trains with a Mexican or he wears our colors, can we stop with that shit, please? You know, it's kind of insulting. It's because a guy gets socked in the face and he's willing to take a bunch of punches. You think that's the way we fight? Have you guys never watched, like, Salvador Sanchez? You know, I mean, there's a graceness to Mexican fighters in the way we fight. I don't know. Maybe I'm being sensitive about that, but it irks me when I see that all the time. Okay, he trains in Oxnard, or he trains in L.A., or he trains this, and he's got a Mexican trainer. It doesn't necessarily mean he fights like a Mexican because he was getting hit a lot. And, I don't see it as a Mexican style. Especially when I think one of the greatest fighters of all time, who's on the top of my list above a lot of these other guys you could put on there, is Salvador Sanchez. And the guy was graceful in the ring. He was a great counterpuncher, great mover, knew how to use his jab. He knew how to drop his right hand, and if he missed it, he came back with a counter left hook. He always finished with that left hook. I don't know, that's my rant there. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. It was a very close fight. You want to take some calls here, Gabriel?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk a little bit of this upcoming card as well as we wrap it up. But I agree with you, Dave. It drives me crazy. The whole Mexican style, if you're talking aggressive, no holds barred, iron-willed, okay, I'll take it. That's pretty Mexican style. But, oh, he likes to get hit in the face a lot. Like, I didn't like that they assigned Mexican style. I guess they were more talking about Triple G, or they were saying this is going to be a Mexican style fight. I think they were talking about Triple G. Because they certainly weren't talking about Rubio, because we don't lay down like that.
Right? Yeah. Let's go with area code 951. You're on Live Round on Leaving Ring. What's on your mind? You got that, brother? All right, let's go back on hold. Let's go area code 347. You're on Live Round on Leaving Ring. What's on your mind? 347, you out there? Okay, two knockdowns here on Leaving the Ring right now. People just tuning in. Listen, hey, let me bring this subject up. You know, because the announcement is Pascal and Stevenson, which I think is a great fight if it happens in March 14th. I think it's a great startup for the year. Even in February, we got some fights coming up. But with Pascal, I mean, you guys were talking about Rob was an earlier caller talking about that fight. I got to tell you this, what I see in that fight here with Kovalev, what makes the fight even more interesting, because some folks are going to right away believe that Pascal is going to get blown out because of the power of Kovalev. But, you know, the rawness that Pascal brings, in my opinion, I think it gives some troublesome to Coppola. I think the movement might be a little bit of a problem. Pascal, who likes to dart in and out, and who also likes to dart in with that right hand. The only problem that I see that Pascal brings is he tends to fade out, and he has a habit of doing one of the most amateur thing you could do in the ring, which is throw your load and then sit there and watch what comes after, which means the counterpunch from the other guy. He's got to really be disciplined in this one. You know, and if he thinks he could do what he did like with Chad Dawson and even with Bernard Hopkins, where he went, you know, full force with them, I think that he's going to have to change his stripes in this fight here, Gabriel. I don't know what you think, but I think he has to be the mover and boxer completely in this fight and stay disciplined with that if he gets in the ring with Coppola.
I think that he's got to be more of the boxer, hit and move, use his speed, use his explosiveness, kind of use the whole ring, slide around him. But I just think Kovalev is the straighter puncher, is it the better jabber, the harder puncher, better mover. He's got more of a complete package and a more thought out process than Pascal. In terms of Pascal, as his defense gets leaky as the fight goes on, he's a little chinny. Overall, I mean, he's a good fighter and everything. You know, don't get me wrong, but I just think, you know, when they fight, he's going to be staring at the lights. Maybe it's just wishful thinking. I don't know. I'm a little biased in this fight.
I think there's a strong possibility he sees those lights, man. I could see it because he darts in, and it's all about timing. And Coppola knows how to time you. He knows how to set up his punches. He showed that he's not a dumb fighter. He knows what to do. He was able to maneuver Bernard Hopkins, who's really hard to make him do what you're looking for, you know, in a fight. And he was able to do that with Bernard Hopkins. He was able to dictate him in a certain way that we've never seen anybody do. Now, the argument could be is that Hopkins is an older guy. He's not the same dude. But at the same time, he's been a crafty man for the past 10 years. That's why he's been in this position he's at. So it makes it very interesting. It's something that Pascal's got to do in terms of being disciplined in boxing style. He can't go out in spurts. He can't do exactly what you were saying. He's really got to be the mover in this one. And with that being said, I said whether it's clean or not, Memo Heredia's got a lot of work to put behind to keep Pascal from fading in those mid-late rounds, because we've seen the history of what happens with him. He fades, and when he fades out, he's easy to time because you know what he's going to do. The only move that he likes to do is dart in and out, and you can catch him when he does something like that. You know, man, I always go to the grocery store. When I go to stop in my local grocery store, I'm always buying stuff. And one of the baggers, you know, there's two baggers there. He always asks me every time I walk in, hey, what do you think about this fight? Hey, who do you think about Khan and Alexander? And one of them, I'm coming out, and he goes, dude, what do you think about Alvarado and Rios? And I don't know. I haven't even asked you about it. But I got to be honest with you. I kind of looked at him, and I said, eh. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, that's a great fight. You know, their two fights were great. I said, I know. But you're going to see more of the same again. I mean, he goes, but that's not a bad thing. I said, it's not a bad thing. But at the same time, there's so many other fights that could be made that we have to settle with a rerun. I don't care for reruns anymore.
I'm not that excited by that fight. I wasn't even that excited by the second fight. I thought that they both lost something off their fastball, which, and especially, you know, this fight I think will be at a higher weight, yeah. So, I don't disagree with you, Dave. I'm not that excited. There's plenty of fights. I wish James Kirkland would get it together and fight. You know, I wish for a lot of things, that fighters would actually want to fight Triple G in the middleweight division. That Canelo would come all the way to 60, you know, all kinds of stuff before I would ever think about Rios Alvarado 3. I mean, that's
great
like for
top
rank.
Yeah, I'd like to see Mike Garcia get back into the ring, you know?
Yeah, let's talk it crazy. Just kidding. He's not that exciting to me. He's not must-see TV to me. I don't think he's a bad fighter or a bad person or any of that. I mean, they kind of came at me a little personal and edgy, and I just kind of, you know, wrote an article back. But I have no animosity against the guy. I just don't think he's that exciting. He's kind of boring. He can be cool, but I think everybody needs to slow down. I mean, like Steve was talking Hall of Fame, like other people were just calling him the man, and I just like – let's see him fight somebody that he's not supposed to beat.
Right.
Like, that's you know, I kind of sound these days like I really hate this sport, but for me, it's just like I want – it's kind of – I feel the same way about boxing as the way I feel about the movies anymore, except in the movies I can actually find pockets of things that I like. In boxing, it's all serving people's self-interest, from the boxers that have become more businessmen these days that fight less because cable's gotten involved and the paychecks have gone up. Not to say that I don't think they should get paid well. I think they all should. I think it should be more evened out so that everybody makes money. But it's just such a sport that is – maybe it's always been this way, but it just seems like I don't quite get the things that I want. You know, if
well,
this was a relationship,
I could tell you.
I tell them it's not me, it's you, and I'd break it off.
I could tell you this, that if there's any time that a fight doesn't live up to its title, it was this past Saturday with the Bad Blood card, Tyson Fury and Derek Chisora. It just wasn't even there. I don't know what it was. Bad blood? You mean thin blood? No blood? There was definitely no
bad
true
blood.
No,
bad blood, worst
no.
fights. You know, it was it was terrible.
I mean, I had to go back and watch the Vargas and De La Hoya fight just to get my fix of a bad blood. That's a bad blood. The storyline behind that was great, and the fight lived up to it. But, yeah, Chisora just came out, and he just came out. You know, I don't know what happened to him. There was no punching him. There was no fighter inside of him. And Tyson Fury was able to stay in a left-hand stance, and he was able to get off with – which, you know, he did great. It's almost like the Crawford performance, if you really think about it, which Beltran tried a little bit harder, a lot harder than Chisora, the bellboy. But bellboy was more like bellboy picking the luggage that Fury was dropping off, you know. And he was just following and following. It was a very bad performance. It was a weird performance. I was expecting some fireworks, but didn't get anything. And it's kind of bad for, you know, Tyson Fury. I mean, or it could be good for him. It made him look like he had hand speed. It made him look like he had a lot more balance and a lot more gifts on his side of the table than many others would have suggested, you know. But, God, it was a bad night. And then you had Chris Eubanks Jr., who a lot of folks were high on, and you know, I was kind of getting there, but it gets in there with a journeyman, Saunders, and it kind of tells you again that sometimes when we wish a little bit too much on a particular fighter or for a fighter to be moved a certain way, we're almost reminded that we don't always make the best suggestions as well as sometimes as the matchmakers and the promoters, you know? We can pat ourselves on the back on certain fights, but not all fights, you know? I don't know. It was kind of a weird Saturday, man. I didn't get my fix. I got to tell you that. I was like, damn, what a wasted Saturday. And then Saturday night was like, wasn't really quite there. I don't know.
Now, I think this weekend's fights, though, was the perfect segue. Lemieux, Rosado, Delorme, Hollandi, and De La Rosa versus Centeno Jr. I think this is going to be nice. I think this is something that you can, you know, put a couple logs on the fire, get out the eggnog, and just kind of sit back and enjoy an early Christmas present. I think one of these is going to be a very good fight, if not all three. David Lemieux versus Rosado. I like Lemieux. We've had him on here a long time ago, and I like his personality. I like the way he fights. You know, I talked about on TNR, like people – I think we always look at a guy and fault him for not being Floyd Mayweather or not being Sugar Ray Robinson. And I don't understand what boxing fans is like. You want an action fight, and yet you want a guy that never gets hit. I don't understand how those two things work together. Lemieux is never going to be confused for anybody except for maybe a white James Kirkland. He fights with the same kind of abandon. He goes in there and just goes nuts. Throws a lot of punches, is very aggressive, probably not as kinetic and hyperactive as James is in there, but he's pretty active. He throws a lot of shots, and he's got dynamite in both hands. And on top of it, it's a relentless style. And I think while Rosado looked great against Brian Vera, that was Brian Vera. It was a different level, I think, of talent. So somebody that Russell Amber groomed his whole career, and to think that even though he's not with Russ Amber anymore, his training has been more streamlined. He's working hard, working on a regular, and not, you know, letting himself go between camps. He's talking about David Lemieux. I have to think that Russ Amber's lessons are still in there somewhere. So I just like him. I think he's getting this fight at the right time. I think Rosado is the perfect opponent, and it's kind of an opponent, as you pointed out. So I got Lemieux in a later than usual knockout, like round 8 or 9.
You know, when I mentioned about Rosado being the cockroach of boxing and just can't kill him off, I mean in a good loving way. You know, this is a guy that I think that has put in a lot of work and he's kind of put his heart out there. You know, he's taken the losses and he seems to come back still with the same tension, you know, where he wants to win. He has something to prove out there. And you got to love fighters like that, you know, because a lot of times fighters can just kind of drift into the mist of the sport and you never really hear about them. But Rosado's there. You know, he's always had the short end of the stick, but he keeps holding on to that tiny little stick to see to get himself back out there. Lemieux to me is a guy that's got both power in both hands, like you just mentioned. He can move in forward. He can throw a barrage of punches. But at the same time, he can get caught. He can get clipped because when you're opening up like that, that creates the opening for you to come down the pipe, get down in the middle. Rosado can do that. He's not a sloppy guy. He knows how to box. He knows how to jab. He knows how to move. It's a catch him at that perfect moment type of fight, in my opinion. Meaning that Lemieux can catch him with a big, hard left hook and finishing him off with a right hand, or Rosado could catch him with a nice, beautiful uppercut and drops Lemieux. It's one of those type of fights. I think either way, with however it sways and which way it seesaws, we're going to have a battle between both of these guys, you know. And it's really interesting, even though, like I said, you know, Rosado has been on this losing streak, that this is a guy that comes in still with the strong possibilities of taking this fight. Who do I pick? I'm going to go with the... I know you're going with Lemieux. I'm going to go with Rosado. I think the size of Rosado can pose a problem. I think the jab could still pose a problem. I just wonder how much of his face can hold up to it. And, you know, because he's been through these wars, you got to start to wonder how well his neck holds up his chin. Because that's always got to be questioned there, too. I mean, I know some folks are be like, what do you mean his neck? You know, your spine and your neck, everything else, you know, once you keep impacting it, it's got to loosen up a little bit. That's why you see guys that were able to take big, solid shots, eventually when they get touched, they get dropped pretty easy. It's because of the muscles and all that. It starts to deteriorate. Your cartilage in your neck and everything starts to give a little bit. I wonder a little bit about that with Rosado. But I think that he's going to be able to catch Lemieux in between those small pockets and make an example about trying to come at him a bit wild. So I got Rosado by a mid-round TKO.
Wow. Well, it's possible. I mean, that's what I love about this fight, is that, you know, strong arguments can be made for both guys losing. I just don't think Rosado's face falls apart, or I think its face falls apart in this a bit. Although, you know, you could say that, you know, Lemieux isn't a jabber, which is usually the slashing weapon, or like a long cross, which is usually kind of a slashing punch that will open things up for you, open up the other guy's face. David doesn't really fight like that too much, but he hits hard enough that I think he'll get it done. And then he's kind of rough and tumble enough that a cut's going to happen. Thomas Delorme versus Hank Lundy. That's a tough fight. I think Lundy is too skinny.
I like Lundy in his fight, man. I really do.
Really?
I do. Huh. You know why? Because like I said this earlier. I said, you know, this is not the Lundy that fought John Molina. This is a different one. To me, he's kind of matured a little bit. Not too much. He's still the cocky, likes to talk a lot of trash. But the maturity level in the ring, I think he's kind of learned his lesson and kind of understood that he can get caught in any given moment, you know. I see him being a little bit brave, but not too brave. You know, I just see him having a little bit more control and kind of getting away with some things in there that he probably wouldn't have gotten away in the past, man. I don't know. I like Hank Lundy in this fight. I'm really leaning with him right now at this moment, unless you can convince me otherwise. But right now, I think my pick is going to be with Hank Lundy.
I find it hard to bet on Hank Lundy, you know. He should have beaten John Molina, you know, but he fell apart. I mean, maybe at 24,
a lot of guys
should have
beaten John Molina, though. Let's be honest. A lot of guys should have beaten John Molina.
Yeah, that's true.
But he just couldn't pull it.
He couldn't
get it done.
Guy. but you know, here's a guy that, you know, in Lundy, I mean, he, you know, he's been on a nice streak. I mean, he's got those two losses, you know, Victor Postol, Ray Beltran, close fights, and he lost, you know. But Jose Aluzagun is not an easy guy to beat. You know, it's kind of a style matchup, and he was able to get in last year. And then, you know, Angelo Santana, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where you rate that win. And Gerardo Cuevas, again, that's a 17-11 guy, you know, that had lost, like, three of his last six, something like that. They dropped him in two. Versus, you know, Delorme, who's been fighting, you know, Kareem Mayfield, never really thought much of him, but he took him the distance and really just took him to school more than anything. But, you know, Delorme's not a guy that's deep in you know, I don't know. He's a guy that doesn't crack all that much. And he went the distance with a guy, Hector Velasquez, 55-19 and 3.
Delorme.
Not exactly a great shakes, you know.
Right.
And he's at times when he looks kind of crappy. So it's tough. But I think Lundy's aggression and his sharpness will bring out the best of Delorme if the best is there. If anything
that's
better
my
is
question.
There, I should say.
That's my question, is that he's such a laid-back fighter that it makes you wonder, that can he take another gear? Can he pick up another gear? I'm not really sure he can do that. And that's why, I mean, where Hank could have some control in the fight in moments and when he needs to do. You know, Hank's got to be, you know, the discipline I think Hank needs to bring is not get careless and get caught with a good shot. But that good shot's got to come with some risk. I'm not sure that Thomas can do that. I don't know going back and looking at the fight with Kareem Mayfield, I didn't really see him take a major risk there. You know, he had a guy that was a one-handed fighter, a guy that likes to grapple. But at any time, you could have taken advantage of him a little bit more than just going the distance with him. I mean, but granted, you know, Kareem has never been, you know, knocked out. He's been hurt. He's been rocked. I've seen him get rocked in San Jose. So there is no question you can rock the guy, but it just didn't happen in that fight. So I like Han Lundy in this fight. I'm going to go with him. I like
All
him
right.
in this fight. You know?
All right. And Hugo Centeno Jr., James De La Rosa.
But he got that fight.
I think that's a toss-up, but I'm leaning towards Centeno Jr. I want to see more from Hugo, though, you know. I want him to see him maintain his distance, punish somebody for coming inside. And, you know, I wonder if he's able to do that, you know. Physical strength has always been his problem, his lack of it. He's a tall dude, but he's kind of a beanpole. At 23, he hasn't fully matured. And you would think a guy nicknamed the Boss, who's 6'1½" with a 75.5-inch reach, should be able to make somebody know that he's the boss using his jab, you know, at 154. I haven't really seen him do that. But, you know, De La Rosa, you know, he kind of got the upset over, over Angulo in his last fight. So here he is, you know, another looking to kind of keep stepping up. He's a hungry dude. I think it's a tough fight, you know. I think De La Rosa could get in there and get something done. And if he gets all over Centeno, who's not a knockout puncher, and starts to get some confidence, you know, he could get it done.
You know, the thing that I like, yeah, it is a tough one. The thing I like about Centeno, though, is that he's always in there kind of tough. If you watch his fights and stuff, he's always in there tough, you know. He's not a guy that can keep you off. Just like you said, his size, you would think he would be able to have a little bit more control, a little bit more of a push in terms of keeping the guy honest. He doesn't really do that. Guys are able to come in, and what he comes off of, Centeno, is with workmanship. He outworks his opponents. He out punches them. He throws a lot of shots, and he keeps himself really, really busy. De La Rosa, well, he had a slow, out of his prime fighter, an Angulo, who really couldn't get his teeth around him at all. So this is a completely different match, man. This is a completely different outlook for him in terms of opponents. You know, he's facing a younger, fresher, more volume guy, more energetic,
yeah.
and definitely who would take a punch. And he was willing to really go to the jaws of winning the fight. And I think that's why maybe he may be called the boss in that term, is that he does boss him way into getting a victory. So I think the question is De La Rosa, is he the real deal? Can he withstand whatever fight Centeno brings to him. Can he weather through it? Can he push back Centeno? Can he hurt him? Can he make him stop throwing combinations? It's going to be the big question, but I think the boss takes this one, again, in a really tough fight, and again with his face getting messed up quite a bit. You know, the kid's in always tough, and he's trying to find out where he stands. He's almost, you know, not in complete comparison. I'm not saying they both marry each other, but in terms of trying to find out who they are in the ring, I think that Centeno and Vargas are very close in similarities in that department.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think you're right. I mean, styles make fights, you know, and so I think, you know, Hugo should win this one, but Hugo's got a habit of making fights a little tougher than they should be. So, you know, and I still want to see that Julian Williams rematch. I'm not going to let that go. But I'm going to probably go Centeno Jr. in this one.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, then we're at the end tail end of our show here on Leaving the Ring. Have a great weekend. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. We'll catch up with you guys next week, Thursday, here on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget every Monday, the next round, every Tuesday, Tijuana Boxeo Radio. If we didn't get to your call, we apologize. We'll catch up with you next week. Don't forget to tweet us and follow us on Instagram. You guys have a great night.